Okay, welcome back to Journalistic Integrity. Got a great show today. A lot of NBA playoffs and a little NFL draft at the end. But before I get into the NBA, I want to do a quick tip of the cap to Miguel Cabrera. He gets his 3,000th hit. But more importantly, there are only three players in MLB history with 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, and a 300-plus batting average. That is Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, and now Miguel Cabrera. I feel like he's slightly underrated. You hear a lot about Albert Pujols, Barry Bonds, and some of the other big power hitters, but Miguel Cabrera having that much power, that long of a career to get 3,000 hits and to maintain a 300-plus average, one of the best hitters of all time. Let's shift to the NBA, and in the first-round series, I thought was going to be the most competitive. The Celtics versus the Nets ends up being the only sweep in the first round. A lot of these games felt like blowouts, not within reach, and that the Celtics, even if the lead wasn't, you know, double figures, the Celtics always felt in control. Oddly enough, there have been 90 sweeps in the playoffs. This was the third smallest in terms of point differential. 19 points the Celtics won by in those four games. KD, a lot of people are coming out defending KD. KD was not good. 38% from the field, 21 turnovers was even more concerning than the lack of scoring. 21 turnovers, so over five turnovers a game. And credit to the Celtics defense, credit to Grant Williams, who, if you remember, he was a player at Tennessee. I think he played all 4 years at Tennessee, and he was just like a bigger, stronger, in the paint, back to the basket, just overpowering smaller college players. And credit to NBA scouts, because I did not think he was an NBA player. Scouts, they must have seen something with the shot and be like, okay, this can project out to a decent three-point shooter. But the defense was amazing. Kevin Durant could not drive through him. The Celtics were able to switch. They had Tatum, who was playing high-level defense. Jaylen Brown, really good defender. And Marcus Smart, obviously, defensive player of the year. And they frustrated Kevin Durant. I've never seen, I mean, the last time we saw a superstar player go through this was 11 years ago in 2011 in the NBA Finals, LeBron's first year with the Heat. But at least LeBron was still a good defender back then. And the problem with Kevin Durant, if you watch him on defense, and a lot of these Nets players, they all had minus below average defenders on the court. It was like four out of their five guys weren't good defenders. Meanwhile, the Celtics had at least four well above average defenders on the court at a time. And you just watch Kevin Durant on defense, some of the decisions he was making, he would randomly wander over, kind of like we saw with Westbrook this year, and just leave his man to kind of play like free safety, leave his man for wide open three. We see all Kyrie helping at the end of the shot clock on Tatum, but he gets stuck in no man's land, and they kick it out to Grant Williams for a three in the corner. And then KD just mental mistakes too, going under screens and just letting Tatum walk into wide open three-pointers. And that happened all the time. I wish there's a stat for just wide open easy shots, whether it's a wide open three or a gimme layup, because the Celtics, that was the category they blew out the Nets in. The Nets never got any open great looks, and that's why I think part of the blame goes on Nash. He wasn't able to, after a couple games, adjust and, hey, get Bruce Brown in the middle, kick it out to the corner. Curry was really good, and they're at their best when Durant got doubled. They make a pass, drive, and then kick out to the corner, and there was just not enough of that. It was a lot of, we're going to force it to Durant, who has to battle, work hard to even get the ball, and then a lot of the times, it was either a turnover or a rushed possession. I think ultimately, it came down to the intensity of each team, and each Celtics defender on every single possession, no matter what the score was, no matter where it was in the game, they were locked in and they were not going to give up any easy buckets. Meanwhile, the Nets, much more lackadaisical, like I mentioned, going under screens on a three-point shooter. I mean, the Celtics just had so many just walking into wide open threes without any ball movement. It wasn't like a drive and kick. It was just a screen and somebody doesn't hedge or somebody doesn't go over the screen and they walk into a wide open three. And that's pretty insane to see in the playoffs. It reminded me of like a college basketball matchup where it's like a Villanova team with a bunch of seniors who know how to play against a talented Kentucky team, but they're only hanging in there because they're making these tough shots. Nothing's coming easy. And ultimately, in these games, the better team that's getting the better shots comes out on top. And so what does this do for KD's legacy? And I don't like jumping and overreacting in the moment, because I even remember as recently as a few weeks ago with Coach K, and after they lose to UNC in the Final Four, I was saying this, everyone was saying this, Coach K's legacy tarnished, and some of it was joking, but a lot of it was like, you're not going to be able to say Coach K without saying how his season ended with two losses to UNC and the loss in the Final Four. And then, you know, weeks later, a month later, we're here now, and I'm thinking about it. It's like, no, that's not, we'll remember that, but ultimately Coach K's legacy is 40 years of dominance in college basketball and in the ACC, and is one of the best coaches in college basketball history. But now when we look at KD's legacy, it is a little different, because this plays into a trend, right? There wasn't a trend with Coach K losing in the Final Four or losing in these big games to UNC. It's a trend with KD where he wasn't the main guy with the Warriors. He was getting one-on-one matchups. The attention was on Steph Curry. He was the MVP. He led the Warriors to 73 wins. And now you've got KD. He wasn't able to do it with the Thunder and Westbrook. He goes to the Nets. They've only won one playoff series in the 3 years that him and Kyrie have been there. He had James Harden. He didn't like what was going on. So ultimately, KD's legacy is turning into more of a Carmelo, really good scorer, can make big shots, one of the best scorers ever. But KD was never able to have the playmaking aspect that LeBron had, or even that Giannis has developed. I mean, Giannis last postseason, not only a great scorer dropping 50 points, but he was driving and kicking. And Kevin Durant at 6'9", 6'10", whenever he would drive, all of his passes were getting deflected despite being taller than his defender. And every time he got a pass to Claxton, it just kind of felt lucky, like he just somehow randomly threaded it through a bunch of legs and arms. But none of it felt like a drive and pass out to the corner. None of it felt smooth like a James Harden or a Luka Doncic. Those guys in their playmaking are so good, and it makes a big difference when you can't score if you can at least attract the defenders and make the defense pay. That's what Ime Udoka, the coach for the Celtics, realized. Be physical with KD. Don't let him get clean looks and make him be a playmaker. And he was not able to do that. And that's the reason why he can't be a main guy for a title contending team, because he can't. He's not the distributor. He's not the guy that's going to get the role players involved in scoring to win these big playoff series. And that's where we're left with Kevin Durant. Underwhelming performance in the playoffs for the Nets with both a healthy KD and Kyrie. So let's shift to the Warriors, who are now the favorites to come out of the West based on their start against the Nuggets, and also the Suns not looking great with Devin Booker injured. And, you know, Steph Curry, two-time MVP, going to go down as an all-time great player, still playing at an extremely high level, is coming off the bench. And not a lot of star players would do this. Matter of fact, we had Carmelo Anthony just 2 years ago saying, nah, I'm not going to any team where I have to come off the bench. Okay, and this is a Carmelo Anthony that was shooting 40% from the field and playing zero defense. Steph Curry's coming off the bench, the most unselfish superstar I've ever seen in the NBA. And the Warriors were laying in the weeds. They're getting healthy. They've got Klay Thompson. He scored 30-plus in Game 4. They're starting to play better. They got Jordan Poole, who I don't know how he didn't win the most improved player. I don't like being the guy that freaks out over awards, because ultimately we forget about him, especially most improved player. I mean, can you name anybody that's won that award? I can't. But Jordan Poole went from the G League to now he's arguably the best shooter on the Warriors. He's the best free throw percentage shooter, shoots a really high percentage from three, and he's just a really great scorer. And the awesome thing about this Warriors team is how many of these players were drafted by the Warriors. All they do is draft great talent and develop. They've got Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Jordan Poole, Kuminga is going to be coming up the rank soon. And they're starting to look like the Warriors of old. Just the ball movement. It's just so much fun to watch. And it's just like, this is the way basketball was supposed to be played. The driving, the kicking, unselfish, the extra passes, getting open shots. It's not the ISO ball. And we've seen a lot of ISO guys, a lot of ISO teams struggle in the playoffs. And this has kind of been one of the main themes that I've seen with a team like the Grizzlies, who've struggled with the Timberwolves. It's a lot of Ja Morant centered offense, and you can see when he's out, and even when he was out in the regular season, the Grizzlies are still really good, if not better. And that's not to say they're better without Ja, but it's, you know, if Ja is playing a certain way, if the offense is just all Ja driving, it's not enough, and it's not a good way to play. It just doesn't feel the right way to play when you've got four guys standing around and one guy dribbling. Eventually that comes back to bite you, and that's never been a successful strategy in the playoffs. But right now, Ja is shooting 40% from the field, 4 turnovers a game, 27% from three. And thank gosh for Desmond Bane, who is their leading scorer. He looks like Saquon Barkley. He's built like Saquon Barkley, but actually good at his sport. And he doesn't look like a three-point shooter. He's built like a running back, like a linebacker, and he's just money from three. And he also plays really hard, so he's one of those guys. Each playoff, we have usually a few guys that break out. And, you know, we had Jamal Murray a few years ago. Looks like Desmond Bane is one of those guys that's taking the step forward. And on the Timberwolves side, Karl Anthony Towns, I don't know if you heard, his mic'd up, but you should. And here's what I'll say about Karl Anthony Towns. The more I see of him, the more I understand Jimmy Butler. And I'll leave it at that. And quickly to wrap up the NBA, Eastern Conference side, Doc Rivers up a 3-0 lead. We had the big Embiid 3. Toronto wins game 4. And we had Nick Nurse saying, there's never been a 3-0 comeback, but there has been 3-1 comebacks. And so if we win this game 4, we're at 3-1. They win game 4. Then they go last night and beat a lifeless Sixers team in Game 5 in Philadelphia. And so Doc Rivers, there's nothing I would want more. There's nothing Twitter would need more than a Doc/James Harden blowing the first ever 3-0 lead. And since 2015, Doc Rivers is 3-11 in closeout games. Simply a, you know, there's enough sample size where you can say Doc Rivers, for whatever he says to his team, however he's acting, they lose focus and they lose intensity as the game goes on. And, you know, we've seen enough games where this is just becoming a fact that they lit Doc Rivers coach teams, lit their foot off the gas. And I don't think Toronto is going to be able to make the comeback. It just, they do not seem like they have enough scoring and talent down the stretch in some of these games. But you never know. If Van Vliet gets hot, Barnes gets hot, Siakam, it is possible. So that's something to keep your eye on. Bucks Bulls, my only comment on that is I can't believe we have one more of those games. Game 5 is tomorrow night. It feels like the Bucks have beaten the Bulls like 5 times already. It feels weirdly like a blowout, but also the Bulls could have won the first 2 games. They could have won game 1 and they won game 2, but it feels like that series should have been over like a week ago. And it's shaping up, to wrap up the NBA, it's shaping up to be an awesome, in my opinion, I think it'll be Heat versus Celtics, Eastern Conference Finals, and then we'll have the Warriors versus hopefully the Suns if Devin Booker gets healthy. And I think that those will be awesome, awesome conference finals. And let's wrap up with the NFL draft. A little behind on my draft prep. Haven't submitted my big board. Haven't gotten out quite as many mocks as I would have liked. And that's on me. But here's the thing about the quarterbacks. And we talked about this every single draft. The quarterbacks, you always talk yourself into them. We all know that. Everyone thought all 5 quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round last year, especially after preseason, we're all going to be good. And now we're like, maybe 2 of them will be good, Mac Jones and maybe one other. And so now we're in a draft with you know, this draft has the least amount of hype that I've seen in forever. And mainly because there's no star quarterback. There's no Baker Mayfield, no guy that we all saw in college that was awesome. It's Pickett and Willis that I'm hearing that all the media people are saying are the top two guys. But here's what I would look for. I don't, you know, the Steelers are rumored as going after one of these guys. Tomlin likes Willis, and then you've got Pickett, who's a Pittsburgh guy. I don't think the Steelers are going to get a quarterback. I think, look, here's what I'll say. Watch which franchises pick the quarterback in the first round, because I don't think it's going to be a well-run team like the Steelers that are going to go out and reach for a quarterback when they could get, you know, a solid player on the offensive line, like the center out of Iowa that the Steelers need. I don't think they're going to reach. And just look at it. It's going to be a team like the Panthers who reach for a quarterback in the first round. Now, I do think the Steelers might wait second or third round, see if they can get Riddler from Cincinnati, but I don't see them reaching in the first round. Last thing, a ton of good receivers in this draft that are going to go in the first round, I think around six or seven. And here's the thing about the receivers is they're now in the tier with quarterbacks where if you've got a really good receiver on a rookie draft, that's a huge bargain and huge value. So I think a lot of receivers are going to be taken in this first round because we see the market for really good receivers. You got to pay them $25-30 million. And if you can get one in the first round, you're paying them, you know, $6-7 million a year. And we see with Justin Jefferson or in Cincinnati with Jamar Chase, these dominant receivers are being paid way under market value. So having one of these guys on a rookie contract is really valuable. I'm hoping the Chiefs get Jameson Williams. One wide receiver that has my red flag is Drake London, the dude out of USC. Just doesn't seem like he can get any separation. Doesn't seem fast, straight line or side to side in his routes. And so that's a guy that I think teams are making a mistake for. He's big and strong and has good hands, but ultimately, if you can't get open, if you can't separate, it's kind of like the receiver the Patriots have out of Arizona State, who I can't remember his name right now, but big, kind of athletic, but he's not able to separate at all. And ultimately, that's a really big factor in having a successful receiver. When we look at, you know, the Jamar Chase and Jefferson and Cooper Kupp, all these guys really quick, in and out of cuts, or at least the straight line speed with Metcalf. So he's off my draft board. We'll leave it at that. But that wraps up today's Tuesday podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'll be back in a few days. See ya.